How can they lead others to change? Does change happen in our imagination and minds only? What about reality? And how can reality be changed without involving people in the process of change? So, timing is decisive, and a mature leader should always consider its importance. In this short but precise comments, Adel conveys to Rafif the essence of his experience as a mature political leader. And she, a newborn revolutionist who is not fully developed, cannot respond to his cautions and fears. Adel and Rafif continue the evening together. In a quiet place in the darkness, he tries to kiss her. He also implies that he desires her. Since she knows that Adel does not love her and that he only wants to satisfy a momentary desire, she refuses to perform that role. He wonders about the reasons behind her rejection. And she replies, pressures on yourself. How could you then be totally authentic? Despite her rejection, Adel tries to persuade her to change her mind. She reminds him of the social limitations and how she, as a revolutionist who does not want to be alienated from her society, cannot surpass the element of time. Isn't this the very idea which he endorsed when they were passing the street? Why does he contradict himself? She wonders. Why does he remember the importance of proper timing in political affairs and ignore it when it comes to emotional and sexual affairs? She thinks. The end of their story comes in chapter 17 when they are attending a party. By this time, Rafif is deeply in love with Adel, yet he continues to treat her with emotional detachment. In recent months, she has been trying her best to win his love and attention, yet he keeps closing her out. She has tried to reach him by understanding his thoughts and habits and needs, but all her efforts to win his attention and love fail. And she finds herself just where she has started. He desires her, but that's all. He is not ready to commit himself to her emotionally, sexually, or socially. At the party, she finds him hugging another woman in a way that indicates physical intimacy. She feels jealous and hurt. She stands in the dark garden alone, drowned in sorrow and bitterness. She realizes how naive she has been to allow this man to dominate her emotionally and intellectually. Again, she wonders about her capacity, his capacities, to feel or understand her position as an Arab woman. If he does not understand the limitation of her situation, how can he understand other women's situation? If he does not understand, then how can he be the leader of her liberation? He might be the best national leader. He might be the most dedicated socialist, it's true. But her experience with him proves to her that he is incapable of dealing with her problems as a woman, objectively, because he is not ready to give up his privileges as a male in an Arab society. If this is the case with Adel, will other men be different? When Adel comes, Rafif tells him about her suspicions and fears. She has discovered that he is incapable of liberating her as he pretends, and for this reason, Rafif will stop seeing him. Adel listens coldly to her accusations and insists that his intention is to liberate her as well as liberate himself from the type of traditional relationship which other people are used to. She cries bitterly, But why don't you remember the element of time when it applies to me too? Why? Now the conflict. There is a conflict, apparently. And this conflict between Rafif and Adel is mainly a clash of interest between them. Rafif defends, imagine now, Rafif defends the set of social rules concerning love and sex in the Arab world because she has known since childhood that without considering these rules, she will not be able to function or perhaps even to exist in her society. Adel, who does not face the same risks, luxuriously practices what he considers to be a social revolution. At first glance, now for you in the West, you might think that he is revolutionary, but let me take you gradually, step by step. At first glance, Adel's attitude might seem revolutionary, but to Rafif, who draws her conclusions from her own and other women's experiences in the woman's corner, Adel's attitude seems selfish, insensitive, irresponsible, and schizophrenic. Rafif might be immature politically, and let's face it, women are still immature politically. But the existential questions which she raises should not be lightly dismissed. They are of great importance to women. They are the reproductive dash sexual part of her twofold problem, which Adel fails to see or understand. The productive part is only half of her problem, but not the whole. And Adel, who fails to consider this part, might be, as Rafif describes him, a hypocrite who applies to politics what he refuses to apply to sexual relationships. In the scene at the party, when Rafif sees him hugging the other woman, she cries, "You don't need me, say it." He says, "I need you and need other women." She says, "I'm just a passing woman." He says, "As I am a passing man." Some of us might think that monogamous relationships will be one day a thing of the past. Some would consider marriage a traditional institution which imprisons the spontaneous flow of feelings and dream of a different relationship between men and women that does not lead to boredom and frustration. Many people dream of new, open types of relationships in which all men enjoy all women and vice versa. Well, the freedom sounds fine in the West, but in the Middle East, it's different. And Adel might be dreaming of such relationships, but Rafif knows exactly what the rules of the social system are. She knows the limitations of her society. She knows the basis of being accepted in it as a female citizen and a female leader. She knows that in this place and at this time, she must live within these rules if she wants to continue functioning with and for her own people. In short, she does not remove herself and her own experience from its historical context. Rafif's personal experience opens her eyes to everyday reality and shows her life as it is and not as it has been described in theory. In the process of liberating women, there will arise broad clashes of interests. Would men sacrifice their privileges for women's sake? Privileged people never give up their privileges willingly, Adel says. And Rafif has learned a lot and a great deal from him. He also says, the bourgeoisie never gives up his privileges to liberate the workers. The first world countries do not sacrifice their interests for the sake of liberating third world countries and humanity. And likewise, Rafif concludes, men will not sacrifice their privileges to liberate women. Those who claim the opposite must either be dreamers or deceivers. Rafif's experience, like other women's experiences in Women's Corner, is an examination of reality where theory is frequently tested and defeated. As a result, Rafif loses confidence in Adel and no longer trusts men's ability in general to liberate women. Rafif now is convinced that men, though they might be great nationalists and dedicated socialists, are incapable of dealing with her problems because of two main reasons. First, they will not give up their privileges as males in an Arab society for the sake of liberating their women. And second, they do not understand the complexity of the woman's experience because they do not live it themselves. Now, Rafif's feminist reaction. Let's see how she reacts. Rafif starts asking for a larger part in the magazine. Her argument is based on the fact that a larger and bigger part in the magazine will help awakening women. Women's awakening is no longer a dream or a demand, but a necessity. When she fails in convincing her colleagues, she reminds them that an unliberated woman cannot liberate others, and that the national liberation cannot be achieved with more than half the nation fast asleep. She says, the woman's corner must spread and extend to reach everybody, and not the woman alone. Changing the woman's opinion about herself is not enough. Society's views must also change. If it does not, the society will continue exerting the same sexual exploitation and oppression. The woman will remain on the defensive. This is not the way for liberation. You cannot liberate and you cannot struggle while you are on the defensive. And as long as women are on the defensive concerning this question, they cannot be on the offensive and struggle. Now, what happens to Rafif's proposal? She wants a bigger share in the magazine. The rightists refuse Rafif's argument. They say that her demands are a challenge to social and religious concepts. The liberals refuse her argument too. They say it is silly to raise extravagant questions during a time of national crisis. The leftists also refuse her argument. They say that once the class question is solved, the sexual will follow. Rafif discovers that neither the rightists, nor the leftists, the uneducated, nor the educated, the politicians, nor the apolitical, mean what they say concerning the woman, and that all women's sacrifices and pains are not taken seriously. In fact, those who sacrifice most are the ones who are betrayed most. Those who dare to break the rules and the norm are the ones who find themselves at the end deserted by all, by the family structure, by the social structure, and by the revolutionary structure. And ironically, they are recognized only by the occupation, a recognition for which they have to pay dearly. It means that the active woman is crucified by all, without any allies or promise of reward, or an insane situation which no hero can afford to endure. As a result of these discoveries, Rafif resigns and leaves the magazine. When Abu'l-Izz hears about her resignation, he runs to her and cries desperately and disappointedly. I never thought you were so individualistic and self-centered. I thought you were a real revolutionary. She ironically answers, what does a real revolutionary mean? To give without a recognition or reward? He promises, after deliberation, you will have your reward. Who does not work does not eat. She asks, ironically, the way women ate in Algeria and in Iran, don't try to convince me. You are like them. You are one of them. As we have noticed, Rafif identifies Abu'l-Izz with them. Them who defeated her in the magazine and refused her plan to educate the woman and make her a real liberated person. Them are the representatives of the male authority in Palestinian institution, no matter what the nature of the institution. This authority has proved that it meant by addressing the woman is to mobilize her, not to change her, not to change her self-image, not to change society's image about her, and not to develop her abilities as a truly independent citizen. Now, from all this, we take lessons. Lessons from the past and present. What we have is a complex situation in which each side suspects the other. Rafif, the educated woman, suspects the male political leadership. The political leadership does not trust Rafif and her judgments concerning the woman's question and insists on offering the same male-oriented plans without paying any attention to the woman's real needs and interests. The majority of the Palestinian women, represented by Saadia, trusts neither the political leadership, which for her is an abstract entity, nor the educated woman who is potentially qualified to be her leader. In such a conflict, a woman's movement cannot be expected to develop despite an atmosphere which invites it. At the beginning of occupation and until the mid-70s, the Palestinian woman shared in all the political expressions that took place in the occupied territories. They shared in the demonstrations, the strikes, the sit-ins, and even in the stoning of soldiers and of burning tires. Now women of the same age and the same educational background are wrapped up in long coats and thick scarves and veils. They do not speak to men and do not participate in political or cultural activities. All they are concerned with are the punishments and rewards of the other world. In less extreme situations, in which young women do not believe in such manifestations, they display concepts and attitudes that prevailed in the 30s and 40s before the Palestinian nation or any other nation, any Arab nation, was touched by the gleam of revolution and change. Such withdrawal in the women's movement is by all means connected to the general withdrawal in the political atmosphere. It's true, we see it and we cannot but face it. Yet, other factors help to retarding in the development of the consciousness of the Palestinian woman. The most important of these is the failure of the revolution to spread new concepts and adopt special programs that deal with both parts of the woman's problem, the productive and the reproductive dash sexual. Until now, we have programs that deal with the woman's question on the productive side only. This is not enough. What we women need are programs that deal with both problems, with the two sides of the problem, the productive and the reproductive dash sexual. Now, I will give you a summary to sweep it out and have a very quick conclusion. Due to the displacement of the Palestinian man, the actual percentage of women in the occupied territories is rising. This rise in the women's number will have social and political impacts, which will be fatal. We shall have a pool of unproductive majority in a society which needs all its powers to be mobilized to face the present challenges. Though women's readiness is developing, yet their power is left unemployed. This unconsumed potential and the deterioration in the political atmosphere created a general mood of apathy, which was shrewdly manipulated by the new religious wave. Thus, thousands of young women, strong women, who were ready to work for the modernization and development of the Palestinian society are now wrapped up in their long coats and veils. The way to win these women back is to create and establish a women's movement that works on changing the woman's self-image, society's image about her, and to develop her abilities as a truly independent person and citizen. To continue offering the same male-oriented plans without paying attention to the woman's real needs and interests will bring the same unsuccessful results. And you will find those who are politically conscious can be counted only on the fingers. We want this change to be massive. We don't need an elitist segment. We want it to be massive. How? What happened to Saadia will be repeated every day. And Abu al-Izz will have to face the same disappointment and ask the same question again and again. You leave the neighborhood, you are the neighborhood, and regretfully wander to every new Rafif. I thought you were a real revolutionary. While she ironically answers, what does real revolutionary mean? To give without any return or a recognition of return and reward? It is high time to remind Abu al-Izz and all Abu al-Izz that the Arab woman did not choose sex to be the determining factor of her life and death. That she was brought up to believe that sex was the center and the cause. That she was taught since childhood that where women are concerned, the sexual considerations are more important than the national. In this case, Abu al-Izz has to remember that it is out of the question to keep reminding the woman of her national duties without asking the national background to open up for her to meet such demands. He cannot ask Saadia to change her behavior towards the nation while the nation insists on feeding her with the same values and the same threats. He cannot also blame Rafif for her resignation. He cannot blame her for feeling betrayed and deceived. He has to remember that Rafif has given so much. She has broken so many rules until she became with no allies to protect her back. She challenged the traditional family, the archaic social society, and occupation. She feels that she is deserted, yet pursued by all. She feels that there is no one who understands her dilemma, not even Adel. Such situation cannot be altered or changed without a movement that sincerely and vigorously work on changing the women's condition. This change must take a long time. It might take a long time and a lot of effort, but it's worth it because we are worth it. And I tell you, men will not do it for us. And I don't have enough courage and pretension to claim that we can do it by ourselves. After all, they are the national leadership which we accept and respect. This leadership has got the authority and the budget. And we need to reach to the budget. We have to reach to the budget. Without the budget, there will be no programs and there will be no movement. And they are the leadership who has the budget. Our leaders might claim that such movement and such programs will not be accepted by the conservative mentality of the Arab citizen. The same claims and excuses were used when the class question was first introduced. The socialist continued pressing this question until it became an inseparable part of the Palestinian revolution. The woman question, or any other question, cannot find its way to existence unless it is pressed. No one will do that but the woman herself. And no one can succeed in crystallizing a movement which encompasses the national and the class and the sexual but the woman herself. This is not a dream, but a necessity. And the Palestinian leadership, like any other leadership, cannot but obey people's needs. And women are people, more than half. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. There are Arab women who are waving to me. It means that they heard the experience. Okay, I'm ready. Yes.
Es stehen wieder die beiden Mikrofone zur Verfügung für Fragen und Voten. Es ist vielleicht heute anstrengender als an den beiden vorherigen Abenden, weil hier die Betroffenheit ja auch stärker ist, oder? Weil wir, also mir geht es zumindest so, uns auch ein Stück weit wiedererkennen in der Rafif zum Beispiel.
Ich habe mich sehr gut erkannt in dieser Geschichte, auch wenn ich nicht in einem besetzten Land wohne in diesem Sinne, aber in meinem Kampf um meine Selbstständigkeit. Und einen Punkt möchte ich hier noch herausheben, dass wir unseren Weg im Vergleich zu den Männern jetzt selber einschlagen müssen und selber suchen müssen und für uns kämpfen als Frauen, das ist uns klar. Aber ein Problem, das dünkt mich sehr wichtig. Ich war letzten Monat in Greenham oder im September und ich hatte übers Wochenende jetzt meine Mutter zu Besuch. Und da hat sie sich sehr böse geäußert über diese verrückten Weiber, die einfach ihre Familien im Stich lassen und Unruhe in der Welt schaffen. Und auf der anderen Seite habe ich halbwüchsige Kinder, die jetzt zur Schule gehen und die ich in dieser Zeit allein gelassen habe und die sich ebenso ein bisschen böse äußern über ihre untreue Mutter und ihre Rabenmutter, die sie so allein lässt. Und so stehe ich jetzt in meinem Kampf, der doch eigentlich nicht nur mir selbst gilt, sondern sowohl meiner Mutter als meinen Töchtern stehe ich allein. Und ich glaube, gerade darum ist es sehr wichtig, dass wir eine Frauenbewegung haben. Denn es ist nötig, dass wir einander heute Mütter und Töchter ersetzen, damit wir nicht allein stehen und die Kraft haben, das zu tragen, was wir tragen müssen.
Yes, I agree. As I have said earlier, that we can learn from each other, we can support each other. And since you have identified with me, and I have to tell you frankly that in my study, now I'm focusing on women's studies and women changing concepts in literature, in international literature. And I find myself so much in your literature, the Western literature in general. And I learn how to solve my problems through you. And I know that the width with which I do not conflict between the national question and the social question might bring some insight to some of the factions in the women's movement in the West. Because there are the separatists who believe that they have to separate themselves from men and from society and live by themselves as women, and also to exclude their experience from the developments of their own social experience. And for us, it is apparent that we cannot do that and we will never do that. Because for most, we need our land to have a home, and we need to have somebody to share the home. We need the man. And this we stress very much in our movement, which might be crystallized by the effort of the young generation, younger than I am, and by the effort of the new educated man, the new generation, the Arab man, and also with the continuous intention of revolutionizing our revolution. So we try, and I think we succeed most of the time to learn from each other. And what shall I tell you about your own story? It's everywhere, I think. It's everywhere.
Sie haben ja von diesem zweifachen Problem der Frauen gesprochen, nämlich diesem produktiven und reproduktiven Bereich, in dem sie eine Rolle spielen muss. Und Sie haben auch gesagt, dass nur dann Programme eben eine Wirkung haben und eine Bewegung auslösen können, wenn diese beiden Seiten in diesen Programmen aufgehoben werden. Habt ihr Frauen in Palästina, also und in den besetzten Gebieten, hier schon konkretere Vorstellungen, wie solche Programme dann aussehen könnten?
We have several attempts in having special programs for women to raise their awareness, especially the productive awareness. But until now, there is no one organization or party, and this is not just what I claim, but also what my sire claim and many militant women who are here in this book, Third World Women's Sex. And if you would like, I would like to recite some of their opinions concerning this, what I am saying. Maysayer, the Palestinian poet, she is a very famous poet, and she is very well known in the Arab world and in the Palestinian revolution, since she is a militant and she started to work since the very beginning of the Palestinian revolution. And she is now the vice president of the Palestinian Women Union. She says that men do not understand the women's problems. Not a single political party has handled it properly or even understood its seriousness. The parties don't even have a women's section. This is what Maysayer says. Another woman, also she's a militant woman, she says that in the political organizations, they don't think about the situation of women. They are only interested in recruiting women as members for their respective organizations. This is what a militant woman called Fatme. In this book on page 75, in the Third World Second Sex, compiled by Marinda Davis, and this conversation and these notes were collected in and published in Palestine Studies through the PLO itself. So we had different attempts within the parties and the organizations to have special programs for women to raise their capacity, productive capacity, to train them to work like for instance training them in sewing, in hairdressing, typing, secretarial work, and so on and so on. But until now, there is no single party or organization in the Arab, in the Palestinian Revolution, not even in the Arab world itself, all of it, does have a program that deeply and responsibly works on studying the twofold problem with its twofold sections, that is, the productive and the sexual reproductive. And until now, we did not have such a program. We don't. And that's why I'm here. I believe that I have to ask for it. You cannot get it without asking for it. And that's why I didn't know where to ask for it, so I came here. I'm from the occupied territories, so I'm here to ask. Yes, please.
Ich möchte mich auch ganz herzlich bedanken für dieses... Ich möchte mich bedanken für Ihr Referat. Das war sehr eindrücklich und ich fühle mich auch betroffen und ich habe viel gelernt heute Abend. Ich war auch sehr beeindruckt von der Form, die Sie gewählt haben, diese literarische Form an einzelnen Personen etwas zu entwickeln, was allgemeine Bedeutung hat. Und ich möchte mit meiner Frage hier anknüpfen. Sie haben geschildert den Weg dieser gebildeten Frau, wie sie, um nicht Kompromisse zu machen, um sich nicht zu verraten, aus dieser Zeitung aussteigt. Und meine Frage ist nun, ob Sie dieses Verhalten eigentlich als individuelle Lösung anschauen von dieser Frau oder ob Sie das als richtige Lösung betrachten. Also, dass es richtig wäre, keine Kompromisse zu machen, nicht auf dieser, in dieser einen Ecke der Zeitung zu verbleiben und dort Ihre Meinung wenigstens zu sagen, oder ob es richtig ist, prinzipiell zu verzichten dann auf Ihre Möglichkeit, sich zu äußern. Also ich kann mir vorstellen, dass das auch eine Frage ist, die Sie selber immer wieder beschäftigt in Ihrer Arbeit.
I think I'm put in a very delicate position, but I'm up to it. And I think that from other women's experiences, we learned and we will learn, continue learning. I believe that if the Algerian woman and if the Iranian woman at the time when they needed her man or woman power during the revolution, I mean to get to power, to achieve and accomplish revolution, if she was aware to the contradictory elements of this problem, she would have stressed and bargained. This is life. We have to learn from men. They are shrewd. They bargain. They never give up anything unless they bargain. So why don't we learn from them? And in politics, it's like this. We bargain to achieve, and during the time when they are still in need of us, not after they achieve liberation, we have to ask for it now. And this is what happened. I'm not saying I'm resigning, because I am not. But from the experience of our women in the occupied territories, this is what's going on. Women lost hope that their interests are dealt with seriousness through political channels or through social and cultural organizations. So they withdrew. This is the result. You see it. And that's why the religious movement succeeded where we failed. Now, this might be a bargain, a natural bargain for men, to show them that this is the result. If you don't start right now, no women will participate. And I believe, not just for us, for the Western women too. Don't wait until they don't need you anymore. And this is exactly what happened in the West. During the war, they needed you. They manipulated you. Okay, it was in defense of your country. That's fine. That's great. But at the same time, if you had this feminist awareness, you could have asked for rewards and returns immediately. And later on, when the war ended, the Second World War ended, they pushed you back to your homes and kitchens. Even the image of the woman who was a hero to sit behind a machine or to lead a group of people in the war, I mean nurses, or to drive a car or an ambulance, it became no more the prevailing image, even in your media. The prevailing image became the woman, the homely woman, who is sitting at home just cooking for her children and her husband. We are not against cooking for her husband and children, because this is our duty, which we also would like to enjoy sharing with you too. Since we are sharing your responsibilities, your traditional responsibilities of offering the economical expenses of the family life. So I'm not saying that we will not cook, but we will cook together. Sure. Thank you. It's fair. You see, it gives hope, because I see Arab men who are applauding me. This is lovely. This is more than I deserve tonight. No, I deserve it. I deserve it. So I believe that we don't have to be very very passive in still keeping that traditional image of being the passive, the moralistic woman who does not bargain. No, we have to bargain now when they need us. You know, this is my wish, please. If there is an Arab man, just an Arab man, who would talk to me, please? Or an Arab woman?
I'm not Arab, but I want to say something anyway.
Okay, fine.
Don't you? I can share much of what you're saying, but don't you think that with these concepts, which in my eyes are somehow come from the West, that you lose the Arab identity as Arab women, or I don't know. That.
What is the Arab identity? It's changing.
Know.
It's changing. Arab identity is not a fixed, still, static identity. We are human beings, and we change just as you change. Yes, yes, thank you. And to believe that we are there to stay and remain as we are, this is a misconcept. We are changing because we would like to have a better life, a better society, and more freedom. And we are changing.
I am very happy to meet you. It is very a pleasant moment. I am here today to meet a person like you.
Thank you very much.
And I am married to a Swiss man since about 10 years. And I work as a nurse at Waldspital here. And then I missed two nights, yesterday and day before. And then my friend, Mrs. Assel, she is a Swiss woman married to Palestinians from Nazareth, Madame Assel, and she called me and she said, Sophie, come with me, we go to Palestinian meeting. There is a very important lady from Palestine, her name is Sahar Ghaler.
Yeah. Sahar Khalifa.
Khalifa, pleased to meet you.
Thank you.
And then we go and see that beautiful night. Don't miss it. I said, that's beautiful. Tomorrow I have a day off, and I don't mind to go tonight to see that beautiful moment, and I am here today, and I really am pleased to meet you. I'd love to see you once again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sophie. She needs an applause, doesn't she? She deserves it. Are you a Palestinian?